Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Staff and Graf Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
In links or salad?
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby.
Uh-oh, we're remote today.
We are.
Yeah, here we are. This is like a throwback, you know, except I'm at my parents' house. I go home on the weekends to hang out with them, and I'm in my sister's like office space off the end of her bedroom. Guess what I didn't have growing up, Rachel?
An office space off the end of your bedroom?
You're gosh darn right. It's fun coming back here and sitting here and realizing, wow, my parents do have a favorite child. That's
oh man,
that's
yeah, we've
funny.
Got that in our family too. Don't you worry. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, here we are. The reason why we're remote is because we have a guest coming on today, a pretty special one. If anything, it was he was my rebound to when Rachel, my work wife, left me to go to work for the Vancouver Canucks. It's going to be Jesse Marshall is going to be coming on the show. It's going to be great. It might not be awkward considering that him and I, you know, we were lovers, and then you came back, Rachel, and I had to leave my lover, Jesse Marshall, out in the cold, and it was a shame. He's great. I, you know, talking with Jesse, especially about Pittsburgh, because obviously he lives there, he covers them. It's a lot of fun, and we're gonna have a lot of fun with him.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, there's nobody better to dive into the Pittsburgh Penguins with than Jesse, and so we got all our fancy stats, and they're an intriguing team at the deadline, so we're really looking forward to that. But first, we got there was like a lot of news and just stuff that happened over the last few days.
Yeah, there's some stuff that's going on. So I think it's important that we, you know, that we take a look at it. And we start that off with the Leafs, the center of the hockey universe, as we always do. Namely, that Joseph Woll is back. He's being recalled from his conditioning loan. It's his first, you know, he got injured, I believe it was on December 8th. And now he's finally back. It's been over 2 months. This is a great thing for the Leafs, but it's also giving a couple questions here. Namely, what do they do with Martin Jones, the goaltender that kind of a lot of people weren't expecting to be important for the Leafs, but stepped in and pretty much saved their season. So what happens here, Rachel?
Yeah, I think it's great that Joseph Woll is back. I think he made like 37 saves on 38 shots in his lone game with the Marlies. He looked absolutely fantastic. I went back and watched the game. It was against Laval. But it's a great question, right? Do the Leafs carry three goalies? And I think they have to. There is no chance that Martin Jones gets through waivers. He's got a 907. He's performing above expected. He's played 20 games. And he was sort of the guy that when the Leafs season was on the brink of absolute disaster, he was the guy that came in and sort of steadied the ship and bought time for Ilya Samsonov to kind of refine his game. And so I think he deserves to be up on the NHL roster. It's going to present some issues, but at this point, we've seen it so many times where if you get a goaltender claimed on waivers later in the season, like it could be a problem come playoff time. So I think the Leafs are going to find a way to keep Martin Jones on the roster. And it's going to be tough with practice time and whatnot, but they've got the resources and the guys to be able to make sure their guys are getting puck shot at them pretty often. But I'll be interested to see how Joseph Woll performs at the NHL level when he comes back, because at the end of the day, like you're still talking about a guy that was relatively new in his role. Like he's considered a rookie by every sense of the word in terms of Calder eligibility. And so you look at this and now you've got three goaltenders. One was performing really well until he got injured. Then you've got a guy who refound his game and you got another guy who's been really resurgent. And so I look at this and I go, there's not really a downside here. And yeah, they're going to have to share the net. And Martin Jones probably needs to understand what his role is, but I think he's probably going to be great with that. You get to keep your NHL salary. You don't have to go ride the bus in the AHL. And the Leafs don't risk losing him. So I think that's fine. But I also think maybe if Joseph Woll comes back and he's good over the next couple of weeks, do they have an extra trade chip at the deadline if they really need it?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing that I never even considered. But the thing that's really important here is, well, also, I mean, let's be clear. Martin Jones is on a one-way contract, so he'll be getting his money. If anything, he'll make more money in the AHL because he doesn't have to pay escrow.
Yeah, he won't have escrow. Oh, damn. Yeah, I didn't.
So if anything, okay, he might be like,
for whatever reason,
hey.
I thought it was a two-way. But maybe that's – oh, no, that's Hildeby. That's a two-way. Never mind. Yeah. Okay, yeah. He's a one-way.
Yeah, Hildeby's still on his ELC. But who knows, man? Maybe he wants to go to the AHL. He's like, I don't have to pay escrow. This would be great. But, no, so the thing is that the Leafs, they have, Rachel, precisely $0 in cap space right now. That's not a joke. That's not an over-exaggeration. They have $0 in cap space. And it's going to be difficult to sort of get these players back because they have – you know, Cali Yarncroke is coming back. Joseph Woll hasn't been activated off of LTIR yet. There needs to be a roster move to come just to fit Woll back on the roster. And then they have Timmins, who can also come back. He's on IR right now due to mono. They have Mark Giordano, who's on the bereavement list right now, but he's on non-roster, so they need to make a move for him to come back. And then obviously Cali Yarncroke with $2.1 million for him to come back. It's going to be very interesting to see how they make this work.
Yeah, it's going to get interesting here. I think Mark Giordano is a different story. They're going that's something where you can find like $850,000. Like that's a salary, whatever the case may be. Cali Yarncroft's a little different. They're going to have to move some bodies here with LTIR and whatever else the case may be. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. I think there's definitely some trades and some other things that are going to have to get made to make sure that they've got all of this. But if there's one thing I'm confident in, and there's almost nothing I'm confident in with the Leafs, but there is one thing I'm confident in, and it's Brandon Pridham's ability to manage the salary cap. That guy finds money out of nowhere. And so I am 1,000% sure that he already has every scenario sorted out, because those are just the kind of things that Brandon Pridham does. And so I'll be interested to see it. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks for the Leafs, and either playing really well. Like, they've won the most games in a row that they've won since, I guess, 2004. So you and I were in elementary school, I believe, grade 2 and 3 when that was the case. And so, hey, I mean, leave it to Toronto to cause a bunch of problems for itself when it's playing arguably the best that it's had in 20 years. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting time in Toronto, and they get the Vegas Golden Knights on Tuesday. That's going to be interesting considering they just absolutely smacked them last week. I would have to think there's a response coming there. That generally doesn't happen twice. And even if Vegas doesn't win, it isn't going to be as easy of an evening for the Leafs as it was on Thursday.
Listen, these are good problems to have. They have too many good players and not enough money to fit them under. It's a good problem to have. They will figure it out. Brandon Pridham has seen every possible scenario that could possibly happen, and he has a solution for it. It's going to be great. All right. Speaking of someone who's probably seeing stars right now, it's Matt Rempe.
God bless.
This guy is fighting everybody. He has more penalty minutes than total ice time so far. He is just every single game, it seems, because, you know, we get this every once in a while where there's a guy who comes in the league and he establishes himself as a big boy. And we don't see it very often anymore, but we used to, is that every sort of anyone who can throw knuckles on a team is like, all right, well, this guy's the litmus test now. This is the guy I'm going to square up to and start chucking knucks, as we like to call it. And boy, oh boy, is that happening. He did lose pretty convincingly to Matthew Olivier of the Columbus Blue Jackets, I believe on
I think
Sunday
that might be because
Saturday.
It was like his fourth fight in five
exactly.
days or something like that. Like, hey, I feel like somebody at the Rangers, if you look at it, and I heard it on the 32 Thoughts podcast, but it was something that I had kind of been thinking about. I was talking with Johnny Lazarus a little bit, like, Peter Laviolette, veteran coach of the NHL. Chris Drury, like, veteran of the NHL. And you look at the veterans they have in their lineup, whether it's Chris Kreider, Jacob Trouba, whoever the case may be, someone in that organization needs to pull that kid aside and say, okay, we know what you bring. You don't need to feel obligated to fight every single night. You can bring it on the forecheck. I saw somebody call him an Adam Edstrom, who's his line mate, who's 6'7", the New York's new Twin Towers. And I'm like, let's maybe not do that. Let's not make that nickname. Yeah, we're not going to do that. But I think that person made a good point in the sense of, like, they're really difficult to play against, and you've got Barclay Goodrow in the middle. And so I think if someone can get a hold of Matty Rempe and just say, hey, you've proven that you deserve a spot here and you bring a spark to our lineup, just get in on the forecheck, big hits, be difficult to play against. And when the call comes, you can answer the bell, but don't do it every night. Like, I don't want to see this guy fighting Ryan Reeves every night, Nick DeLaurier, Matthew Olivier, some of the NHL's toughest guys. This guy's a kid. Like, he doesn't need to do that. But I do feel really good for him. His interviews with Emily Kaplan and after the stadium series, they've been awesome. I think it's fantastic for the league that this kid has come up and made an impact. I just hope that somebody gets to him and says, okay, like, we could dial it back a little bit now.
Yeah, the only problem, though, is the guy's so tall that, you know, as we saw against, I believe it was Nathan Bastian, is that anytime he tries to hit someone, he literally takes their head off.
Yeah, I kind of agreed with the fact that that didn't get any supplementary discipline, because I went back and I watched the hit. I watched it in real time, and it was a clean hit in terms of, like, what he did. Then I watched it in slow-mo, and that's really where all the dissecting happens. And if you look, one, he's 6'8", can't help that. He's not going to bend down. But then you look, his elbow's down, his shoulder doesn't raise up, he doesn't take three strides into the hit. He actually tries to stop, and Bastian is bent over, and it's just a really unfortunate hit. And obviously you feel really bad for Bastian, but at the same time, that's something where he can't really do anything about it. He can't not hit him. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of this needs to be that the onus is a little bit on the guy that's getting hit. Like, you can't be bending over like that in a position. You can't put yourself in that position, because by the definition of how you're supposed to hit, Rempe can't do anything but what he did there. And so I feel like he also shouldn't. That was, yeah, he got 5 in a game, but I agreed with the fact that he wasn't fined or suspended, because he couldn't really do anything else but that there. And another guy I think we're going to touch on here, Zach Bogosian. Like, that's another tough customer in the NHL. I don't want to see him continuing to fight guys like this. Like, I think that might be a little much here.
Yeah. You know, now I think just because we're getting a little short on time, obviously, we want to have Jesse in on the show here. So I think what we'll do is we'll save the Bogosian-centered story for Thursday, because it's a fun little story that I think we can really kind of dive into. And it's very, so we'll do is a little tease. And instead, we'll go into our PWHL report, as we always do. And boy, oh boy, every week is just the same. There is drama. There is fun. There is high-scoring games. There's low-scoring games because of great goaltending. Everything is great. Rachel, what happened in the PWHL this week?
Yeah, I went to the PWHL Toronto game on Friday. Froze my butt off because I didn't wear the proper jacket. So that was bad.
Well, you're an idiot for that, but okay. Yeah.
Yep. But PWHL Toronto played New York. Toronto's now won 5 straight after a really, really tough start to the season. But it was an awesome game. And honestly, like, Toronto scored to take the lead with about 8 minutes left, and then New York tied it with 8.6 seconds left in the game. And it was awesome. It was a 1-1 game, and the goaltending was outstanding. Ellis Shelton tied it for New York, and then overtime, New York got a power play in overtime. They didn't score, and then Natalie Spooner, twice in the shootout, both great moves, and Toronto wins 5 straight. And so I think Toronto's kind of finding itself here a little bit, figuring out an identity. Troy Ryan's got them playing that typical Troy Ryan system. If you watched the women's national team when Troy Ryan was the head coach of Team Canada, pretty much the exact same system. And he's got them rolling now a little bit. But I think probably the biggest piece of news here is that Taylor Heise was put on LTIR this morning. And that's a huge loss for Minnesota. She's been one of their best players.
Pick, man.
Yeah, she's also been, like, one of the most entertaining players in the league. Like, I feel like I see a highlight from her every other day, and pretty much every game in, game out, she's been one of their best players. And so losing her, they said she's going to be gone. for a little bit. They've signed a player whose name is escaping me right now to a 10-day contract. So it's interesting. I do want to follow up on last week's PWHL report. Okay. We said we'd figure out contract voiding and how okay. that works. I got the answer.
Okay.
So somebody got back to me, and basically, if it's a one-year contract, it's not a guarantee. So you can kind of be like either bought out or have your contract voided, but you still get a month of your benefits and healthcare and all that kind of stuff. And so there is like a little bit of severance and stuff involved. But if you're on a one-year deal, you can have your contract
terminated anytime.
Terminated, yeah. If you're on a multi-year deal, you can't. And so that's an important distinction, I think. And so I wanted to follow up on that. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, like the goalies.
Real quick before you do that, hold on. How many people, one question I want to ask you, because yeah. maybe you have this off the top of your head instead of me. And there's no, I don't believe there is a cap friendly for the PWHL yet, unfortunately.
There is not.
Likely there will be. How many players are actually signed to multi-year contracts?
I don't know, but I have to think that a lot of the national team players, so Poulin, probably not on a one-year contract. Laura yes. Stacey, Alex Carpenter, Hillary Knight.
But I feel like there's Sarah a lot Nurse. Of one-year deals.
Like yeah, I would say if I were to guess, and it is a guess because we okay. don't have this information. If I were to guess, if you are not a top six-ish player in the league or a top pairing defenseman, you're probably on a one-year deal.
Man, it's that's tough, man. The fact that you can get axed at any time is, I mean, it obviously it adds another layer to the whole like drama of it all. But also, I mean, I can't believe the player association agreed to that. What?
Yeah, I would have to think, in talking to the person that I spoke to, that's something that they're going to look to sort of renegotiate and change, or at least make it so that there's an incentive to not buy the player out, right? So maybe the team has to pay out that contract or whatever the case may be. But I don't want to ask you. So okay. I feel like the goalies might be too good. Every yeah. single goalie who is qualified has a save percentage over 900. Four goalies have a save percentage over 940.
That's crazy. How many teams are there, Rachel? There's six.
Yeah.
So like basically the starting goalies of two-thirds of the league are over 940.
Yeah, and I have some concerns about, and don't get me wrong, like I think the goalies being great is great, but I think for the viability and like the entertainment of the product, people like scoring. And I was talking to a couple people when I was at the game who are really involved in the women's game, and they raised that concern. They said, they're like, we have concerns that the low scoring is going to impact the level of entertainment because people want goals. Like they want goals. And right now the goalies are, I guess they're too good, right? You can't have 2-1 games because as much as like people like us who are hockey nerds, like
we're low scoring, we like
defense. In order to bring fans in, kids want goals. Like that's what they want. They don't know what a defensive scheme is. They're 8 years old. And so I do wonder sort of how this is going to play out, because even I went back and I looked at like the original six in the NHL, there were 6-4 games and 5-4 games. We're just not seeing that at the PWHL level. And it's a credit to the goalies because they are really good, but I do have some concerns, and they're not invalidated concerns. Like there are people within the women's game that are sharing those concerns, that they wonder if people are going to tune out if there isn't goal scoring. And so I do wonder kind of how we get to a spot where there's more goal scoring, and whether it's the goalies are just too good for the skill level right now. And that's not to say that these women aren't highly skilled. It's just that these goaltenders are absolutely fantastic, when we've got to maybe do something about it. So yeah, if there was ever an argument to make the Nets bigger, this might be it. But all I'm saying is like, I think it's been a fantastic sort of kickoff for the league. But I do think we've got to find a way to get some scoring in here, because I think that's what's going to keep the kids coming back.
Listen, I can recognize the defensive scheme and I appreciate it as much, but I don't care. I want goals. I want to watch, you know, pucks go in nets. That's the whole point of hockey. So I get it. What's interesting though is how we fix that. like how are we supposed to remedy that situation? I mean, you said make nets bigger. What is it like? Make pads smaller, like they did sort of in the NHL, or I don't know, like what could possibly be a solution?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't.
Or do we let it play out?
Yeah, I think you gotta have to let it play out at least for the first season. One thing that I've kind of spoken to a few people about is if you score on the power play, like that power play doesn't end. And if you remember, that was a rule in the NHL until Wayne Gretzky came along, and then they were like, okay, we kind of have to get rid of this rule. But
I can't believe there was ever a time where that wasn't a rule. That just feels like one of those rules that's been there forever. Like a team scoring like 5 goals on like 1 power play. I can't even imagine that we lived in a world where that happened.
Yeah. And so I think maybe seeing that could be fun. But other than that, like it's kind of tough, right? Because like you got to play 5-on-5. You have to continue to kind of play within the rules of the game. It was a physical, like it's been really physical. And PWHL, like the Toronto New York game, it was a really physical game. Like there was outright hitting in that game. And I was like, God damn, like Jesus Christ. And so I like that they're allowed to do that. That's something the players have pushed for. So I noticed compared to the international game, it was a much tougher game. And so, yeah, like I just, it was an absolutely fantastic product. And yeah, that's been this edition of the PWHL report. And so we'll be back next week and maybe we'll have more goals to talk about. Who knows?
Maybe we will. Now, before we get Jesse on, when we get Jesse on, we're going to have our CanTorque deep dive, Rachel. And so I just want to make sure that CanTorque makes rugged, hardworking industrial torque tools for heavy equipment operators around the world. They're proudly Canadian and manufacture everything out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada for heavy industry around the world. Their new website tells their story 20 years in the making. Visit CanTorque.com today and ask Colin for more details. This is our CanTorque deep dive. And here he is, my ex-lover.
Look who's here.
Jesse,
how are you, buddy?
I feel like a college kid who's been gone, you know, for like freshman and sophomore year abroad, didn't come home at all. And now this is like my first time back and like whole family's together, you know, mom and dad are back together again. Mm-hmm. This is great.
Mom, I feel like Rachel parent trapped us, Jesse.
She did. Yeah, it's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. We're both Lindsay Lohan and we're just.
Oh, my God.
I'm just sort of, I'm 2005 era Lindsay Lohan, like good era. Just want to point that out.
Okay. I'm the mess. I'm on okay, the bender. Perfect. Okay, good. I'm glad we were able to agree on that. Jesse, first of all, how are things going?
Good. Yeah, everything's good.
Good.
You know, from a non-hockey perspective, yeah, everything's been fine. Well, I'm sure we'll get into the hockey side and the fire that's burning in Pittsburgh right now. But yeah, everything else is fine. Watching a lot of Moana this week.
Cool.
Last 10 days or so, really been entrenched in that with the little one. So ready to move on to something new.
That's good.
Okay. So we're at Moana. What other princess movies have we watched 100 times in the Marshall household?
So you got to remember a big Grinch family here, right, Rachel? So that's an all year movie. The one with Tyler, the Creator soundtrack, that doesn't ever really go off. We've dipped our toe into Frozen. We like Olaf a lot. We're not as much into like the princess side. We like the snowman. So, we just need to branch out, man. That's really what it comes down to. I got her off the Peppa, but now it's like Insidious on the Moana and like, you know, we need variety is really what it comes
down
to.
Wait, Tyler, the Creator, is on the Grinch soundtrack?
He did the whole soundtrack. It was him. Yeah. Yeah. And Pharrell.
Not the Jim Carrey one. The new one.
No, but, okay, the new one. Yeah. One or whatever. Yeah. That's insane. That's insane.
I got you on this one because as the resident Disney psychopath on the show, if she likes Moana, put on a movie called Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, yeah. We haven't gotten to that yet. But I think
that is very Moana vibey. It's another Hawaiian style movie. That's the original one. It's also getting a live action. So if you get her into it now, then when the live action one comes out, you'll be able to watch that too. Maybe it'll give you some variety, but she might not be able to tell the difference between Moana and Lilo right off the hop. So you might actually get her into it. I love
as long as
Lilo
the songs are different, you know, or the content is different. I'm fine with that. Yeah.
There you go.
I feel like Emperor's New Groove is also like a little Moana coded. Like, I feel like she'd be into that. There's a lot of big dudes yelling and funny songs. It'd be great. Not a lot of fun happening in Pittsburgh right now, Jesse. And you know, we're talking about exes, and you know, here, you know, ex lovers and whatnot, and you have our ex GM in Kyle Dubas at the helm of all this. So we've never seen a you've seen Dubas at the helm of, like, obviously big issues in Toronto, like, you know, losing streaks or first round exits and stuff like that. But we've never seen him at the helm of a team that is careening towards not making the playoffs. What is that like right now?
Yeah. I mean, so I think it's fair to both acknowledge, one, the task that he got assigned to him when he took this job, which is to sort of clean up the Hextall mess, and to sort of do it in a summer, like, hey, we still want to compete for a cup. You got to make all these changes in 3 months. Go. And he tried his best. Unfortunately, he hit a couple doubles, right? He brought in some, he brought back Tristan Jarry, which has proved to be a really smart decision, term aside. And he brought in Alex Nedeljkovic, who's been phenomenal, right? Phenomenal. It's really given the Penguins their first good run of goaltending in years. But he tried to replace the entire bottom six, pretty much, sans Jeff Carter, and has failed at that in a big way. Matt Nieto, Noel Chari, Jansen Harkins. These are players that are just not doing anything. They're hemorrhaging chances and shots against. It's kind of wasted, I think, you know, the Sidney Crosby experience this year, which has been, you know, he's still an elite player and is doing amazing things. So, unfortunately for Kyle Dubas, he can't afford to strike out on those replacements, and he has. And now he's in a position where he just traded, you know, last week, a sixth round pick for Emil Bemström, who's been fine in his first game. But you see where I'm going here. Like, we're in the position where he's accumulating a lot of two-way defensive fourth line, third line players in an attempt to continue to try to get this bottom six going. And I just, like, honestly, you look at the market right now, Rachel, like, you can't do that right now. You can't go out and make three hockey trades to improve your bottom six. Who's your partner for that? Like, where are you getting the juice for this? You know, you already had to give up I know it's a sixth rounder, but he says he doesn't want to trade futures. You're going to have to do some kind of future trading, as we just saw, to revamp that bottom six. There's absolutely nothing in the American Hockey League that is going to help you right now, anytime soon at all, maybe ever, maybe until 2030. So I don't think that, you know, that's not a place that you can go to fix it. They've tried to do that, but he is very much in a spot right now where he is doing everything. He's, you know, he brought Jesse Puljujärvi back in. He's hurt. You've got, I mentioned Jansen Harkins. I'm missing somebody.
Lars Eller is another one.
Well, that he's actually worked out pretty well, Rachel. I think that's the only other one that was, like, I wouldn't even call that a double. It was more of a single. But he's been fine. But it, you know, Riley Smith, another one that, like, I thought showed a lot of promise early on and is kind of just almost totally checked out. You can't go out and make, you know, he's trying his best. He's bringing in a lot of these spare parts. Some of them work, most of them have not. And that's the ongoing process for him is, you know, they don't want to close this window, right? So you keep hearing words like pivot, soft rebuild, right? Like, you know, it's a very ill-defined concepts that give you the sense that he's going to be buying and selling simultaneously.
Okay, so we talked about this last week, Mike and I, on our show, because we did a deep dive into the Ottawa Senators. And what we noticed is ever since Shane Pinto's come into the lineup, it's given them three scoring lines. And then you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, who lately have gone to three lines, and they're centered by Matthews, then Domi, then Tavares. And that's giving them that they have some depth there. I think part of the issue in Pittsburgh, and we were seeing it with Toronto for the majority of the season, is that they were really over-reliant on their top six, and specifically really over-reliant on Sidney Crosby. And so when you talk about striking out on these bottom six players, what can Pittsburgh do realistically that can give them three lines that are difficult to play against? Like, is there a lineup combination that they can have with their current players that will allow them to have at least three lines that are a little bit more balanced? Or is it truly like, hey, we got to make some moves here because we're Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and some merry men up front?
Not having Jake Guentzel makes this a lot harder, right? Because he would normally be stapled to the side of Sidney Crosby, and you'd evaluate your options from there. I mean, I get the sense Mike Sullivan's trying that right now, Rachel, because he's taken Riley Smith completely out of the top six and put him on the third line in an attempt to strike some level of balance there. And then, you know, the recently acquired Emil Bemström's also been put there as well, But that's, again, that's a line that scares you a little bit defensively, and you think you can rely on them, you know, late in the game to shut things down and secure a win for you. But if you're down two goals, that's not great. So, you know, I think, and Brian Rust, frankly, isn't scoring. You know, he goes through these wild, like, surges and regressions throughout his entire career. And he's in a regression right now. Hasn't been a super great player this year. And he's usually someone that you could take as like a Swiss Army knife and drop him down to the third line. He's got the skill sets to kind of drive play himself down there, but hadn't really happened this year either. So, you know, there's a lot of things that have struck at bad times in addition to some of the lineup decisions. But, you know, I don't want to discredit Lars Eller because he's been really good this season, especially from a defensive position. And if you look at the metadata, Rachel, there's no forward on the Penguins roster who creates more shooting opportunities from the defensive zone, sourced from the defensive zone, than Lars Eller.
Exactly.
So, but like, what is happening with those shot attempts? They're not that great, right? Like, so I think back, you know, I watched the episode that you guys were talking about those three lines. And the first thing I thought about was the old HBK line in Pittsburgh, right? Hagelin, Bonino, and Kessel. And what a nightmare that was. You know, you had to pick your poison if you're an opposing coach. But, you know, the Penguins right now, they aren't even really a top six team. They're kind of just the top three because Evgeny Malkin is drowning right now and trying to do it a lot by himself. Drew O'Connor, who's a young player, fresh graduated from the AHL, has been on his wing. And I'll be honest, has been fine. I don't think he's been remarkable in any sense, but he hasn't sunk the line. It's been the right side that's been really the problem. They've kind of got Valtteri Postonen playing there right now, who's an exciting young Finn player, just also graduated from the American Hockey League. But, you know, we're running into the thing now, Rachel and Mike, and I know you're going to laugh at this because coaches do it all through the league. We're like, let's punish the young Finn for trying something daring that almost worked. And then like telling him to never do that again. That's not what that line needs. They need talent that can carry puck across the blue line, that can make dazzling passes onto the tape of Malkin stick that blow people away. And right now we're in a sense of like, you know, a game over the weekend, he kind of tried a home run bomb to Malkin and it got picked off. It was a nice attempt. He was on the bench for the rest of the game until the empty net goal was scored to give the Penguins the win. Then he comes back out. So, you know, you're asking,
meanwhile, Jeff Carter is just like turnovers
out there every shift. If it's a defensive zone draw, you can set your watch to old Jeff being out there to take that defensive zone draw. And it's just so, you know, I think there's a huge disharmony right now in just the way things are being run. I mean, you look at the power play sub 15% for this group is inexcusable. And the fact that nothing has happened about that all year long and it's just continued to get worse. You know, you don't get the sense that everybody's like on the same page right now.
Can I ask you a question here, Jesse? Because I'm very interested in this situation just because we spent so long hyper fixated on what a Kyle Dubas team is, what Kyle Dubas acquisitions are like, how Kyle Dubas wants a team to play. And this is a very unique situation for him to be in, but we also never saw this applied to another team. I want to ask you, but first of all, I find it hilarious that you're like, his first job or his biggest job was to remake the bottom six except for Jeff Carter. And I go, well, why was it all that except for Jeff Carter? I feel like that's the first guy you should probably want to focus in on. So it's like, yeah, you know, I wanted to get in shape. So I took everything out of my diet except Big Macs. Like, okay, cool. Well, you're not going to do much about that. Like, it's not going to help you. But a big thing that happened in Toronto with Dubas acquiring players is he acquired a lot of cardio merchants. And what a cardio merchant is – I'm not sure if you've heard of this term before, but it's a player who has good underlying numbers, you know, like all the stuff that would make nerds like you and Rachel go crazy. You know, he's got good, like, you know, good possession numbers. He's fast. You know, he's able to move the puck, but nothing comes of it.
Yeah.
Nothing. I'm talking like he doesn't hit even really, doesn't get to the center of the ice. Just someone out there who is really there for cardio. And I'm thinking the Pierre Engvalls, the Alex Kerfoots, on the defensive end, even like the Justin Halls, but also, you know, when he was at his worst in Toronto, the Ilya Mikheyevs. Have they found has he stapled you with a lot of cardio merchants? Because I feel like guys like maybe an Emil Bemström or other guys like this might be fitting that bill.
Yeah, Noel Char is a perfect example of one. We loved before, right? I think that's a previous.
Yeah, I loved Noel Char.
So that exists. Matt Nieto is the same kind of guy, right?
Yep.
Like empty calorie. There's a lot of empty calorie ice time. Like there's not a lot going on, but I guess it's okay because the pucks, It's like it just exists at neutral zone the whole time, right? Like no one is playing at either end of the ice. All 10 players are packed in between the blue lines. Just
great.
Like playing this awesome. Condensed yeah. version.
It's winning
of
hockey right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, cool. You're not getting scored on. That's great. We all love that. But like literally nothing else is happening. So it's, you know, it's like passenger hockey is what I've been calling it. There's no one on those lines who's like capable of driving like long possessions or like zone entries. And if you look analytically, like at the all three zone data, like the micro stats for the Penguins in terms of generating offense and like where it comes from, it's really just Sidney Crosby, Evgeni Malkin, and Jake Guentzel. That's it. And two of them play on the same line. So do the math. I mean, you're in a pretty distinct disadvantage here with no one else that can do those jobs. It's not even like, you know, I'll use Brandon Tanev as an example. Like Brandon Tanev, you almost could feel that energy, right? Like he shot out of it. It's still the same way for Seattle. He shot out of a cannon.
Absolutely.
Like that's effective forechecking. This, you don't get that same sense here, right? Like you're not getting struck with the same level of awe when Matt Nieto is bearing down on you. So, you know, I do understand. I do think he had like a distinct vision and it was try to get the team to, from a roster perspective, align more with Mike Sullivan's vision. But I got to be frank, you know, the players who are already here may not align great with Mike Sullivan's vision anymore. So adding more of them hasn't really been helpful. So I think, you know, and Rachel, like, think about like the system, right? If you're going to run a forecheck that has this like built-in swing where that guy at the top of the forecheck is constantly going in and out, in and out, in and out. And one guy's dumping and the other one's coming in. And it's just that a whirlwind cycle. Number one, that's not even that aggressive of a forecheck anymore. Like the way Florida plays. Like,
yeah,
you're not Florida. Like, and then two, the older players that you have were really good at that in 2016, but we're just two short years away from that being a decade ago. And you were doing the same stuff, right? So like I've jokingly said all year, you could watch a game from 2020.
Why would you say that?
Why would
you say that to us
tonight? So yeah, that's the way it is.
Okay, so let's look at the analytics, because like on the surface, their analytics are good, right? They're seventh in expected goals at 52.6%. They're seventh in 5-on-5 save percentage, but we've addressed the fact that the goaltending is the very there's basically two things that aren't the problem right now: the goaltending and 87. That's pretty. The rest of it is a big problem. They're second in expected goals for per 60. Their PDO is at 100, so it's basically even at that point, and they take more shots on average than they give up, but they're outside of the playoff race. And I look at this and I say to myself, I'm like, is it really seriously? And you look at against the Philadelphia Flyers on the weekend, without Sidney Crosby in the lineup, they get cakewalked in that game. Is this team really the goaltending and the Hall of Famers, and that's it right now? Like, am I crazy in my evaluation of that?
Most of the time, I think you would look at a team, and like you would look at data and say, like, okay, this team's generating a lot of chances. They're controlling the game and even strength, and the finishing isn't there. That'll change, right? That's generally the line of thinking we would all have. Regression. It's going to come back. Like permanent regression is sort of like a feature of this team. Like ever since Ron Hextall came over, because their finishing has been 27th or worse every single season for the last three seasons. But from the flip side, what's expected on them, right? If we look at the quality of shot that they're taking, it's always been really strong. They can't finish. That's the problem. And like the bottom six is so bad that it really does affect the rest of the good stuff you see happen in the top six. It drags it down and keeps that finishing anchored at the basement of the league. So it's almost like it's like empty calorie expected goals, right? I mean, I 3 years ago, I was like, no, it's going to come back. And then last year, I was like, this is weird, but it'll come back. And then this year, I'm like, no, fool me twice. I'm not waiting for a sudden resurgence in goal scoring here. Like the bottom six can't do it. And I think that the second line has sort of been hampered in even sort of a similar way. And they used to be able to get by with the power play. That was the thing that sort of like saved them was, you know, they had a man advantage that was like plus 20%.
Boy, howdy.
And now you're not living on that. Frankly, the other team's benefiting when they take penalty. You might as well just spend the whole game in the box. You'd win, you know, 8-0 every night. So I think like that's problematic. And that hasn't been able to cover up the warts. But to answer your question, Rachel, yeah, like I don't know how long something can go on before we stop calling it regression and just calling it like a fact of life. You know, like, I feel like we're really teetering on that line with the Penguins of like, this is just the way it works. And until they can make those improvements and find guys that are going to work down low in the bottom six, it's still just a, it's, you know, it's a one line team.
So what is it about the power play that, like, I know that this is the $1 million question here. Like, if you had an answer, you'd be talking to us from your gold throne, you know, in the offices of PSG or whatever, but, or Fenway Sports Group, so FSG. But like, I don't get it. Like, you have, and I know that I'm probably parroting stuff that you've heard in talk radio and columns and all that in Pittsburgh all season long. But like, I don't get it. How you can have four Hall of Famers on one power play, or, you know, three, depending on you know, which kind of combination you want to put there, and then, you know, a Brian Rust or a Jake Guentzel or pretty much anyone else you want to put on there, and how it can be this bad, how it can be 14.67% when the league average is 20.7. You know, I don't understand how this happens. What is it?
Yeah. So a handful of things. First of all, if I was on FSG's board, the first thing I would do, Rachel, is sell Mo Salah to West Ham for an absurdly low price. Then moving on from that, they run an umbrella, right? So the problem is we live in a world of hyper-aggressive penalty killing units, right? Like the power kill, yeah, sort of,
they call piston it, right? Out, right?
It's right. Right. And the Penguins have been running the same umbrella since Mike Sullivan took over. I said, like, you could prepare for a game tonight by watching the tape in 2017 of the power play. Different players, same thing. You have all these Hall of Famers that essentially – their response to pressure from a penalty killing perspective is to move up ice towards the blue line, right?
Oh, good.
So you end up with this sort of T shape where you have everyone up playing like horizontal to each other on the blue line and no presence down low or at the side of the net. I don't know how, you know, Todd Reirden, supposedly the guy that I think is like sort of chiefly in charge of the power play. And I've said this, I don't know how he's still there, right? Like,
yeah,
like you've really have not done anything to address the symptom. They've changed players ad nauseum, but they are putting them in the same system, and it's the system that is the problem, right? You could put, like, you pull Mario and Jágr back from the reunion last week and put them on that power play, and they're going to be in like a weird spot they're unfamiliar with. You know, I've said, like, I'd love to see them do something like a 2-1-2, right? Get Crosby down on the goal line, right?
Yes.
Get somebody and then put like your Guentzel in the middle or a Rust or somebody that can find open space and strike. I don't care who you have on the point at that point. Your focus goes from being the top side of the blue line all the way to the corner. And that's what they need. They have absolutely no presence down low on this power play. It's none. It's non-existent. And they're never in a position, by virtue of how high they get pressed, they're never in a position to win puck battles down low. Because you always have somebody has to come from north to south to try to support the play. And it's just like, there, I have seen, and I'm not kidding you when I say this, like, it's just, there's been no adjustment to the system. They've had set play stuff they've worked on off of faceoffs to try to like generate something really early, but there's been no change. And they can gain the zone pretty fine. It's not even like they're having trouble gaining the line and establishing position. It's just once they get in there, they can't do anything. And they end up really high. And if you look at the heat, that's the last thing I'll say. If you look at the heat map on where they're shooting from, right point. It's all right point where Erik Karlsson is. They just give it to him. He runs out of ideas. He shoots it.
Okay, so I have a radical idea for the Pens power play, because I've noticed the same thing, and I was kind of hoping that you were going to break it down that way, because I'm like, okay, this, I'm either only watching a small sample here, or like, this is insane, because this looks the same as it did 8 years ago.
Yeah,
I look at this and I go, okay, you have four Hall of Famers. Malkin arguably has the best shot of it all when it comes to a one-timer.
No argument. No argument for me. Yeah.
Karlsson and Crosby, I think, are the best passers.
Yeah.
I wonder, in your 2-1-2 scenario, what if the guys on the goal line were Crosby and Karlsson? Because at that point, they could pass to each other and use the net front. Yeah. But then they're also passing up to Malkin, Letang, and Guentzel, who are different shooters. Specifically, let's say Guentzel and Malkin. Like, if your head is on a swivel because you know that Crosby can score from anywhere on the ice, or he can come and he can walk out off the line and do something, or Karlsson can thread that seam pass no matter what, I think if you get the toe caps pointed the wrong way at the penalty killers and you get that puck back to Malkin, he's going to have all the time in the world to just walk in and absolutely murder a puck. I don't understand why, if you're going to play 2D, and this is like the one scenario where playing 2D on a power play is acceptable because you have Letang and Karlsson, why don't you use one of them who's an elite passer on the goal line and force the penalty kill to really get creative in how they defend you? Because I don't think we've ever seen a defenseman, certainly not that caliber, on the goal line and basically quarterbacking the power play from the goal line with Crosby. And
I mean, that even legal? The corner. Is the defenseman on the goal line elite? Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah.
It's but this kind of goes to where I'm going with this. Is the fact that the coaching staff has been there for as long as it has part of the problem here? Because I look at this and I think this is something I would try. You got to think out of the box, because you can't do the we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. Like, that just doesn't cut it when you have this much talent on your power play. Is there a merit? I think Mike Sullivan's a great coach. I really do. Like, I think he'd be great. But I wonder
what you're going to say, Rachel.
I wonder if he's run his course in Pittsburgh. Is that a legitimate worry?
Yes, 100%. 100%. I mean, especially because I think that the messaging has just been so constant and the same for so long. What made me answer no to that question earlier this year, Rachel, was they ran through this stretch of games and they were really successful in it, where they were playing, I think, Seattle, Colorado. They were out west for a lot of it. And Mike Sullivan like eased that forecheck up and almost switched to like, you know, almost like a 3-2 almost, right? Like where the guys were really deep and they were playing off the counter, right? They're generating these turnovers because they've completely eased off their forecheck presence. They're kind of opening the door and saying, come on in. And then when you get in, they shut you down right between the blue line and the red line. And they were playing, you know, you want guys like Letang, Carlson, Crosby, Malkin playing off the counter, like turning off defense into offense and catching guys off guard. And they won those games decisively. Like they were the best performances they've had this year. And then it's just gone. You know, it's not constant. It seems like it's something they only want to use against teams they're truly afraid of. But I think if they did that same approach against teams that are way worse than them, they'd be feasting, right? I don't want to beat up on like, you know, a Columbus, but like, let's take think about the way Columbus looks right now. Are they equipped to handle that? Like, do they want to get into a boat race with you? They want to get into a boat race with you. They want to have the access to scoring chances. But if you can like, you know, generate stuff off, you know, again, turning defense into offense, you let your talent take over. And that's a microcosm of the power play, right? Again, like they are not in a position where they are equipped to like overload wall battles, right? Like, that's why I keep going back to this 2-1-2 scenario. There's no against the grain passing. You know, how lethal is it when you have somebody sneaking in back door and you're throwing the puck the opposite direction against where all the penalty killers are? Like, there's a total blind spot for them there and they never exploit it. And it's, you know, I knew that Erik Karlsson wasn't going to be like this cure-all power play fixer, because he wasn't, I don't think, the focal point in San Jose. I think he was more of like a good trigger man. Could also distribute the puck from up top if it came his way. But now it's almost like they're forcing him into this like vertical QB role where he's like at the top dead center of the ice in that umbrella. And he doesn't look comfortable for starters. And I think it's diminished his ability to use his shot. So, you know, look, again, I think it's just in the current state, if they keep using this system, you're just rearranging chairs on the deck of the Titanic. Like it's not going to get you any different result. And, you know, I think that lack of change overall, you know, and again, outside of those, you know, circumstantial things we saw against Colorado and Seattle, like Mike Sullivan's playing the same way he's always played. The message is the same as it's always been. And if you missed the playoffs 2 years in a row with this group, you know, noting the pressure that's on to try to make something happen in the twilight of these guys' careers, you know, you could get, people say, well, Sullivan get hired immediately. Probably. Cool. Yeah. But what do you like? That's not an excuse to continue like the status quo either, right? Like look at Lindy Ruff in Dallas, right? I mean, we all know how that was a tough departure for him, and Buffalo, and that, you know, he was there for eons, but it just, sometimes it goes stale, and sometimes a group needs a new voice. And let's be honest, this is the longest tenured coach Crosby, Malkin, and Letang have ever had. They've burned through the rest like toilet paper. I think Dan Bylsma was the longest, like 3.5 years, maybe. Mike Johnson was here for like here for a cup of coffee.
He was here for like four months.
It was nothing. So
Michelle, you know, Therrien.
Yeah, again, that voice wore out really quickly, and I think the expiration date has come and gone here. I think, you know, and it stinks to say, because I think he's the best coach in team history, right? Mm-hmm. But like, we have to judge things by the current state of results, not the 2016 state of results. And that was a long time ago.
Now, we focused a lot on forwards, obviously, like the power play and forecheck and whatnot. I want to talk a little bit about defense before we let you go here, Jesse. And namely, I think it was you that tweeted it, but I saw where it's like basically the Pens have at this point like two guys in their six defensemen who can play like actual defense.
That's true, yeah.
I think that was you who tweeted that.
Yeah.
And hey, it looks pretty bad. The biggest, other than getting Carlson in the fold, I think the biggest ticket item that was acquired, maybe not re-signed, but acquired, was Ryan Graves.
Yeah.
6 years, I think 4.6. What happened to Ryan Graves? He was a good defenseman. He had positive metrics all throughout.
Yeah.
Basically, since he was not from his sophomore season on in Colorado and then in New Jersey, he looked, he's big. He's relatively young considering the amount of, miles that he has. What the heck has happened to Ryan Graves?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good environment for him. You know, if you go back and look at both the video and the data on his time from New Jersey, he liked to have the puck on a stick for the breakout. He generated a lot of zone entries, and he took a lot of sometimes empty calorie shots. He loves to shoot. That is his favorite thing to do from anywhere all the time. And he's not able to do that now. You know, Marcus Pettersson is one of the players I was referencing that can actually play defense and has been phenomenal now for three straight years for Pittsburgh at doing just that and being sort of like that stay home shutdown guy. They're asking Ryan Graves to do that. And I think that, you know, Ryan Graves is perhaps the least physical defenseman I've ever seen. Like he just doesn't have, that's not his role. You know, he wants to be involved in what's going on in the offensive zone. He wants to wheel and deal in the neutral zone with the puck on his stick.
And he's playing 6'5", 220.
Yeah. He's got a long reach. He's got a long reach, but
is he a cardio merchant?
Yeah. I think a little bit, man. I think he does fit that bill because he's a great skater. And he loves to shoot a lot. And I think that that's what he's limited to. And so, what makes it work for Marcus Pettersson is that he's like prime era Brian Dumoulin, he's a black hole. You put him in against a 2-on-1, he's going to somehow knock that puck away and buy time for those forwards to get back. And he does that with like good gap control, good body positioning, getting a hand up and playing a little role of an offensive lineman there on some guys legally, obviously, within the boundary of the rules. But that's not who Ryan Graves has ever been, And I think, I was talking to a lot of people from New Jersey when they signed him, and they all said the same thing, like, decent with a stick in transition, but don't lean on him to, clean up people's messes. And that's exactly what he's – so they bumped him down to the third pairing to kind of get him away from Letang and Carlson. And I think those results were okay. They were better. But that's a lot of term and money to be invested on a third pairing defenseman who isn't really making a huge change to your landscape by playing down there. Look, at the end of the day, Rachel, there's too much ice time for Letang and Carlson, right? You're not going to bench either one of them to play Ryan Graves, right? So, yeah, I don't know, Mike. I think that
– and you shouldn't.
This is one of those ones where we talk about the Kyle Dubas struck out on a couple things. This one was one of those ones where he struck out and then comically spun around with the bat and fell to the earth afterwards. It's funny you mention that because we loved Cody Ceci here. He was like really good in Pittsburgh. So that's a different conversation for another day. But yes, to answer your question, I think that's been a real struggle. And I think I wouldn't be surprised, and it's hard to do because of the contract, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's trying to shop Ryan Graves actively right now, just because there's no way. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There's just
okay, no, but I mean, like, there's not working. There's no way you can trade him, though.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying.
He's got 5 years after this at 4.6, and he's a third pairing defenseman, like you said.
Well, here, he's a third pairing defenseman here. I think you could still bill him as a second pairing guy, right?
He's a first pairing defenseman in Arizona. Who are we kidding?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, but you're a first pairing defenseman. Jesse's young child is a first pairing defenseman in Arizona right now, if Matt Dumba's hurt. You know, like we're talking. Yeah,
I guess. Yeah. Last question, probably the most important question. I guess
I didn't mean to insult your child like that, Jesse, by the way. I know she could definitely run a power play.
I'm trying to dissuade this goon like behavior that we're playing mini sticks in the basement. And I'm taking a beating.
She's little Matt Rempe recently.
She's mad.
Chucking nuts at you. Man.
She got to be in control of your stick at all times. That's the lesson in the basement we've been trying to learn.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. So. Probably the most excited I've been to ask you this or ask anyone this question, because I love just like the raw answer that I know we're going to get here. You're the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins. GM Jesse, GM JM. Who do you sell and what is the price for Jake Guentzel?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to keep him here, right? And I've like been so much fun to watch him. He's been one of the most cerebral players I've ever seen come through the city, like very clearly the son of an accomplished coach. That has permeated its way down to him. But I'm looking for a king's ransom. I don't care if he's not signed through the end of this year. I'd assume any team that's planning on executing this trade is going to have a plan for that in place as the deal gets done. I need a hockey player that can help me right now, today, to start. It doesn't have to be. I'm not looking for a marquee name. I'm looking for somebody I can. What did you call him, Mike? Cardio merchant. Give me a cardio. Give me one of your cardio merchants, because I got a rotating door of them here, and I need somebody in today that can help me out, especially in the bottom six. I need a first round pick, bar none. Like that is a non-negotiable. Yeah. Like, give me another one too. Like next year, you got one lower. Like I might want that one as well. And then I need like a prospect. I need a good prospect. I don't need a Holloway. Like I know that name kept coming up from Edmonton. That's not going to do it.
If you're Vancouver, let's say you want a first Tom Vilander and like, I guess a Dakota Joshua type, because he's actually been really good for Vancouver this year.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, somebody who I think would be a really good fit in Pittsburgh, and I'm
Nils
curious.
Hoglander.
Yeah. My son Nils, is Archdeep Baines.
Yeah.
He's a kid undrafted in the dub, undrafted in the NHL. One of the smartest players I was around at prospect camp in Vancouver. Like his ability to get in on the forecheck, his routes, his work ethic on the puck, his ability to be in the correct spots. He's the opposite of a cardio merchant. He's actually like a productive player. But Vancouver, I guess, well, now they've brought him up. But I think a Hoglander or a Baines, and obviously Guentzel's been rumored to be kind of going to Vancouver. I think those are two players where if you get one of them, like you should be excited, because I think one, they can play right away, like you said, but two, they're the exact opposite of what you have in the bottom six in Pittsburgh right now. And in the fact that like Baines has come up and they asked Rick Tocchet about him yesterday, and you could tell that Rick Tocchet is not going to be happy if they have to send him back down to the A, because he really likes him.
Well, you know what else is discernibly different about them, Rachel, is they're under 33. And that in and of itself is a major change.
They're under 25.
And shockwaves throughout the organization. So, but yeah, I mean, I would like, again, I think the main takeaway for me is, and if it does, you know, I would hate to see Jake Guentzel go for nothing, you know, in the summer. And I, you know, there's projections for him that got him north of $8 million, right, in salary, plus a good term, and he'd be crazy to pass that up, right? But I think underrated is his ability to do it by himself, right? Like there's so much of the sentiment in the Olympic discussion about Jake Guentzel was, well, you know, he's a product of Sidney Crosby. That is not true at all. Sidney Crosby helps, but I want to, like, people need to understand that Crosby himself is benefiting from Jake Guentzel as well. Right. Like it is not an easy task. People hate when I say this. It's true. It isn't easy to play with Sidney Crosby. He's a nuanced guy. Right. Things you do in the moment that are fleeting afterthoughts or habitual to you, he wants you to change because he doesn't like the way that you did it. You don't even know you're doing it. Chris Kunitz said one time to me, I didn't even know I was doing this stuff. Like, it's like, I'm just playing. Like, I've been doing this since I was 14. So like, finding someone who can take that feedback and action on it and like has a grasp of the game like that. Like he has run lines by himself. His ability to dissect a defense, hold the puck, and keep it despite his small stature is very real. And there should be no concern. Like, I don't know what team would be trading for him that didn't have a good center for him to play with. That's not a very real possibility to me. But, you know,
yeah,
there's levels to good centers. And I think, you know, no matter who he's with, he's going to be able to generate play by himself. And I think the price should be reflective of that, frankly.
As much as it does kind of stink, you don't want to lose Jake Guentzel. You know, he's a good player. He helped, you know, he's able to play with Crosby. He's because like you said, it's difficult to play with Crosby. You know, like there, we've seen that with a lot of different superstars too, and that like superstars are inherently, like you said, nuanced players, and they do certain things. They want pucks in certain positions. They just want it to, they ask for different things or maybe more things from a player than any other kind of player would. And it's tough. But if you really want to like pivot, or you want a soft reboot, or you want to do something, like this is the move you make. Like this is like you said, they need futures. They have none. Everyone's over 33. I'm shocked that the helmet decal is not Ben Gay, you know, like it is bad. And so if they're going to do something here, Gensel seems to be, he's an expiring asset. He's the kind of guy, you know, when he gets healthy, can really take a team that's on the bubble and, or take a team that's even, you know, about like a contender and push them over the top. That seems to be your soft reboot or soft mm-hmm. rebuild kind of guy right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's an acknowledgement that this year is over, right? You don't have it now, and you're building the space and assets you need to take another run at it in the summer and hopefully not strike out on some of these decisions that you're making in the bottom six and defensively, right?
When maybe you get Braden Jaeger in the lineup next year, or you get a young player, right? I think Braden Jaeger could theoretically get in the lineup next year.
He's the only one, Rachel, right? I think a year and a half ago, I might have said Owen Pickering, but I don't think that ship has sailed as well. And I think he'll play in the NHL. I just don't think his ceiling is anywhere near what we thought it was. And it's probably going to take him a year or two of refinement in the pro game to get to that point.
That's a defenseman that needs AHL time. For
yes,
sure.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
I have a question for both of you guys.
Okay.
I have a question for both of you guys. And I guess we can let Jesse go a bit after this, because this is really hard hitting. And I think it's going to take up a lot of brain power for you guys. How much better do you think the Pens would be if they were available to use the roughly $2.6 million in dead cap they have tied up between Jeff Petrie and Jack Johnson still for the next at least 2 years?
Oh,
that's a name I haven't heard in a long time. Yeah, I forgot.
How much better do you think if they would have?
Well,
I
think the going contract rate for a cardio merchant is about that. So you could bring in at least one more, have at least room for another.
Get Pierre Engvall.
Yeah, exactly.
Six years after this one.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh God, that's so great. Scary.
Jack Johnson.
All right, Jesse. Well, I hope we didn't ruin your day with this conversation. No. That's good. But thank you so much for coming on, man. You know, we miss you around these parts, and we, you know, anytime you want to come on the show, you let us know, and you are always welcome. It's truly a blast, and hopefully, you know, you'll have some positive things to talk about next time you come on. It'd be great. Hopefully.
Thanks. The nicest reunion I've ever had. I appreciate you having me back. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Of course,
thanks,
man.
Jesse.
Well, what a show it was, Rachel. What a great conversation we had with Jesse there. This obviously does bring us to the end of the podcast. So obviously subscribe to Twitch, subscribe to YouTube, follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on pretty much anything, on TikTok, pretty much anything out there. Any podcast you have, that's where our podcast is. We had some great content. Yes, that'd be great. Let us know how bad or good we are doing. Mainly bad. Those are always more fun to read. We had a ton of content last week. Mike's Meals for One, where you get to learn how to make a fried chicken sandwich to sort of paper over the crushing loneliness you feel every day. That's great. I want to make it clear that you cannot double these recipes. They are recipes for one. And if you share them, you are going against the spirit of the game here. But also we had Arkham streams will be continuing this week. We did two last week. We'll likely do two again this week because Gotham needs us just twice as much as usual. And we will be back on Thursday. But before we're back on Thursday, we want you to donate to our charity of choice, Jumpstart. It helps economically disadvantaged kids play team sports, which is a cause that is just so important to Rachel and I's heart. Do that, and also buy Can Torque tools. We love our sponsors, and we love our charity of choice, and we love you, the listener. See you Thursday.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.